This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode number 14 of the BritRest Roundtable. This week, we are missing Rob Reed, who is... I actually don't know what he's doing, but he's not here.
I heard he's running a bath.
Marvellous. So with me this evening are Ollie Court.
Hello. Everyone in their bath, hi.
We'll have to get to that in a minute. And Alan Coonahan.
Hello. I've already broken the podcast rule by making my first appearance on a show and just like starting talking before I've been introduced. So I'm a very rude house guest, as you'll come to find.
But we're going to annoy Rob this week and just break all the rules. He hasn't given us like a little run sheet, which he normally does. So we're already kind of going to be all over the place, but it's going to be fun. As I said at the start there, we're going to be talking about WXW, who recently ran the 16-carat gold tournament over in Oberhausen in Germany.
The technical term is lovely Oberhausen.
Lovely Oberhausen.
And if you saw it, you'd know how untrue that is.
I can't say I've ever had the pleasure. What is Oberhausen like?
It's the most industrial, just... Well, there is actually like there's one area which is like really nice. They've got this huge, massive shopping mall. It's one of the biggest shopping malls in Europe, and there's loads of cool things to do in around there. And then literally everywhere else is just this industrial wasteland where I'm sure important things are created, but it just looks awful.
It looks nice from inside the building.
Yes, it does. It does. I've come to be a huge fan of Oberhausen. But like when you first, every time I've been walking into 16 Carat with someone who's making their first trip there, and they're just like, "Is this where the show actually is?" And I'm like, "Hey, don't worry, just walk through all this broken glass and gravel here, and we'll be in the second. You no need to worry."
I guess we should probably explain for those who aren't aware. Alan is one of the English commentators for WXW. Along with Jeremy, whose surname no one can remember.
Jeremy Graves.
Jeremy Graves. There we go. Same as Corey, I should know that.
Yes.
So Alan's our inside scoops guy for WXW, seeing as both of us have... Have you been, Ollie?
I've never been, no.
Never had the pleasure.
Going to Germany in 2 weeks, but not to WXW.
Unfortunately, my scoops are kind of crap, like... Which Lucha Underground star needed one of the young boys to go to McDonald's to get a milk for his tea?
Was that Shane Strickland?
No, afraid not.
That's too bad. Yeah, that was the only guess I had, so... All right, before this goes completely off the rails,
more off the rails than that, buddy. you're going to regret getting me on here, ruining this show.
So night one was like the introduction to the tournament, all the first round matches. What really stood out for you two in terms of like what was the best match on the first night? I mean, I know what my answer is. So,
well, there's two potential first answers. The first match of the tournament, Big Daddy Volta versus Zack Sabre Jr., was a really fantastic match with like a very sensible match. Like, in the way it was worked, everything made a lot of sense. Like, Volta used his big size. Sabre Jr. used his size to his advantage after being, like, outmatched early on. Like, he then sort of turned almost into a luchador and had to use lots of flying maneuvers, like arm drags and stuff to throw Volter off balance, and eventually just schooling him with the technical ability to win the match. But probably the match that got the most buzz and was probably the most memorable match, maybe even the whole weekend, was Will Ospreay versus Shane Strickland, which was so awesome that it sounded like Alan's mic broke at the end, like he almost jumped out of his chair, and how amazing it was.
Alan remained very still and professional while speaking into the microphone calling that maneuver. Jeremy, however, all 7 foot of the bastard, he decided to do a big jump as I was getting very excited, but maintained a still disposition. Jeremy did a little jump, but for Jeremy, a little jump is a big jump. It just knocked out the connection of the thing a little bit. And when I started getting messages on Twitter about sounding like something crazy or whatever, I was like, okay, well, what I thought had happened was they got us to, because I said it to the tech guy afterwards, that as soon as Jeremy jumped, I started hearing crackling in my ear. So I figured, okay, that's not going to come true right on the commentary. So I was like, okay, I'll say it to the tech guy. He might want to just take that bit out or whatever. And he says to me, can you recreate it? I was like, sure, I can recreate it. So during the intermission, I'm just standing up there in the balcony like a dope going, Ospreay with the Rainmaker into a C4 and now to the top, 6:30. But maybe I just didn't like time it right. I didn't leave enough room between like the Spanish fly deal and the 6:30. So they didn't use that. So it was actually the original that was kept in with the the connection going. When it got disconnected a little bit, but we did also lose the whole Ilya Dragunov Mike Bailey match, which I got to do with Rico Bushido, the Shotgun English host. We each did a match at Rico on night one. Jeremy's came out fine, mine didn't, and that was like the match before Strickland Ospreay, so we were already kind of conscious about the connection thing. So I had to do that whole Bailey match again at the end of night three, looking into a camera lens on a video camera.
Oh, man.
I was surprised how well it came out. I was very impressed with because that match was on an episode of Shotgun 2 weeks ago. And I was like, yeah, they did a really good job. Kind of. You notice it more watching night one as a whole when it goes from the other matches to that. You notice the difference. But when it was just on six on Shotgun, I was like, hey, it sounds pretty good. So
I was going to go Ospreay Strickland. They actually put that on YouTube for anyone who's watching.
They did not. they're trying to get it down off YouTube.
Oh, I thought it was like an official upload.
No.
Yeah, this confused Rob because he mistakenly thought they had put it up and had a little smack on the wrist because of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I read it off Rob's tweet, so I saw that it was on there and was like, "Whoa, that's a pretty big match to be given away." Yeah, on,
I doubt they were too happy, and I checked there a couple hours ago; it was still up there. So,
oh really?
These things take a bit of time to
gotta get that down. Yeah. It's worth the price of admission alone, that match.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I saw the shows like as a whole we're kind of doing the rounds in a lot of places, which on one hand I'm happy about because I'm like, hey, loads of people will be seeing WXW and getting exposure, but on the other hand it's like I know how much work went into these, and I really like hope people will. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking about getting the shows, do support this product because so much work and effort was put into it. And really, more than like when it's like PWG or whatever, I'm like, and people are downloading it or doing whatever with it, it's like, it's whatever, because I know PWG can be quite inconvenient in this day and age for people to get, and everyone has their different circumstances and reasons. And
I think it's generally because it takes them about 6 months to ship the DVDs.
Exactly. So there's like reason there, but with this, like it could not be any nicer of a service. It's reasonably priced, and you can choose to download in various qualities. Like you can have optimal quality, or if you can't bear the gigabytes, you can take a lower quality download, or you can stream it if you have a smart TV. There's a Vimeo app, you can just watch it straight on your TV. It's really convenient, there's really no excuse. It's only a couple of bucks, and I think people should support this. But I know, like, I was seeing a lot of talk about 16 karat in my timeline in the last week, and I know like a great percentage of that wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for the fact that they've been doing the rounds illegally. So I was happy to see it getting the coverage and people hearing about how good some of this stuff was. But at the same time, I very much hope people do decide to support WXW with this and going forward. And when they do keep producing good stuff like this, that they get rewarded for it. But yeah, I think they're going to do pretty well with these DVDs and the streams. The DVDs are made; they make the DVDs available through Much Media as well. So it's all they cover really all the bases for whatever people might want.
Well, there was a WXW DVD came out in WrestleCrate last month.
Oh yeah,
it was one of the ones from the end of last year. So that's a pretty swift turnaround in terms of the DVD getting into WrestleCrate. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, they get the DVDs out very quickly. The guys at Much Media are pretty good about that.
So that's definitely better than PWG's turnover on Bowler. Have you still not seen Bowler yet, Ollie?
I don't think so. No,
Ollie and Joe Lanza are never watching Bolo. We just have to accept that.
It's just you get to the end of the year and it's like, ah, the year's over now. I want to see 2016 still, which is what we're doing.
I suppose for me, you guys mentioned two matches there, but to me, honestly, the most memorable match of the night was the main event. Axel Dieter Jr. and Marty Scurll. These two have been embroiled in a feud for a long time, basically dating back to last year's 16 Carat when Axel beat Marty. And here it was really the culmination of the feud in an I Quit match with the stipulation that if Axel quit, his tag team with the Mac, which is a tag team that they've established, Hot and Spicy, as being like super close to. To both those guys' hearts, and it's a very important thing to them. Even though Axel is kind of going off as a single star, his tag team is still very important. So he was like, I'd die before I'd have this tag team split up. And if Axel won, Marty would have to basically leave him alone. So it was an incredibly violent match. It was, as far as like kind of that uncomfortable level of violence and just feeling like things were getting a bit too much, the only thing I can think of that I've experienced live close to it was Brian Danielson and Nigel McGuinness in 2006 in Liverpool. And to be honest, even with that,
it was unified, wasn't it?
Unified, yeah. With that, like, I was early 20s, like I was Ollie's age, but a lot dumber than Ollie, and I was just like, I didn't even really think about the repercussions as I was watching it. But like over the years, as you go back, it's like you kind of see where that was kind of maybe a little too much. And there were times in this match where I thought it was a little too much. And when I saw Axel backstage afterwards and just saw the welts and everything, it was like, oh, Jesus. But I haven't watched it back yet. I've only got to see a little bit of stuff back on the VOD. But I hope I didn't go too overboard on commentary. It was kind of one of those things I had never really called a match with that level of drama and emotion in it before. So I kind of was, it caught me off guard a little bit. I wasn't expecting it to be as crazy as it was. And I was trying to convey the emotion of it, but at the same time, I may have kind of gone overboard and just been a bit over the top with it.
It definitely came off really well on VOD. It probably was more dramatic and more emotional live, just because, like, you didn't really know where it was going to go, like you say, like, how vicious was Marty's attack going to get.
Yeah.
But,
and
like,
I thought Marty was going to win as well, so I was, like, waiting to see what would be, like, the killer thing he was finally going to do to him.
Dieter
Jr. Tournament, we were both kind of leaning towards him as possibly winning the whole thing, so we kind of thought he'd win first night.
Marty was actually my pick to win. I was very wrong. He was used in a very different way throughout the weekend.
I thought Marty really did well here with like his promo throughout the match and like keeping that character consistent. It was almost like a James Bond villain, like in Casino Royale, where he's taunting Bond throughout. it did come across very well, and it did get pretty violent towards the end, and the emotion that both guys were carrying through really came across well. Axel Dieter Jr. has like amazing facial expressions, Like him shouting nine over and over again. Like the emotion really came through.
The thing with him is he is legitimately super emotional. Like he's, and like things like it's going to be interesting to see, and we're going to bring this up as a topic, the mixed crowd reaction, the Cena Tanahashi kind of a deal that he's getting now from the crowd. He will like really take that to heart. And there was a few over the course of the weekend, there was a few like glares he gave to the crowd that were like in the direction of the fans that were booing him, that were like, you could tell he was like just resenting them for that. But there was other like moments which I found even more powerful, where the fans that were cheering him, and there were still a lot cheering him and that had signs up for him, and they would try and overpower the ones booing, and he like would look towards them and just slap his heart. And it was like, like knowing this guy a little bit, I know that was like totally legit, and that means the world to him that there's people sticking with him. And like he would be getting a little broken up about this, but I can tell you for a fact the company love it. They thought it was just the most amazing thing ever. They were a little caught off by it. I don't think they were expecting it. And the way it sort of played through the weekend, like if it was just one show, it might have just been one show and it might have not really gathered momentum. But the fact that it was three nights back to back, when it kind of crept in on the first match, then the second night you had all these same fans that wanted to increase it and make it even more of a deal. And then by the third night, it was just full blown. So yeah, it's interesting to see how it develops. But I think the company are very excited about having a John Cena, essentially.
I'd definitely say it was almost the story of the tournament as it progressed. Like you say, it went over night to night to night and almost expanded as it grew. And I would say Dieter Jr. was almost playing up to it in just the way he wrestled, especially in the Galloway match. I thought like he was almost playing up to that, and like you say, feeding off the people who were supporting him and maybe the people who weren't supporting him as well. It created a really like fun dynamic and like gave extra intensity to his matches. So I can see why the company like it, because it makes Dieter Jr. matches, if it continues, mean even more than they already do.
What did you guys think of the Ilya Dragunov match at the quarterfinal on night two? How did that heat come across on the VOD? Because live, that was unbelievably insane.
that was very good, yeah. It's just the way they, when they just start slapping each other, it felt legitimate. You know, it just felt like a real good old-fashioned fight. Like, they didn't really like each other, and the crowd were just all over it. And, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, they've had a dynamic, because Cerberus, Ilya's faction that he's in, and the babyfaces, essentially, have had a feud going on for a long while now. And it's like, the matches, even in the sort of non-sort of street fight matches, where it's just like a trios match or whatever, like, it will be structured, and there might be a little bit of brawling here and there, but whenever Axel and Ilya get in, it's like those two against each other, they just go at each other like cats and dogs. They're wild whenever they're against each other.
It's intense.
Yeah, they've kind of have their own dynamic within all those tag matches that's really awesome, and it was cool to see them go one-on-one at Carrot and Axel win, and it was Ilya's first loss in a one-on-one match, I think ever in WXW, which is crazy because he essentially came in as a rookie and has just been he missed a year with a fractured skull, and he just come back and he's just been this unstoppable killing machine. He's not like he's this huge big guy like Rusev. I think when people hear about like this Russian Ilya Dragunov, unbeaten Russian machine, if they saw
him, like Ivan Drago,
yeah, if you saw him, he has put on a good bit of size, but if you saw him, like, he's got a very young boyish kind of look about him, but it's just the way he wrestles and the way he fires up in his matches and the looks he gets on his face. You talk about a guy with good facial expressions, Ilya Dragunov, my god.
He's got those crazy eyes as well.
Yeah, I was trying to have a serious conversation with him backstage afterwards, and he still had his freaky contact lenses in, and just with one eye, and like I was throwing me all off. I couldn't, and like I was telling him, like, because previously with Ilya, he's just crazy backstage, and I just don't go anywhere near him because he freaks me out when he's like headbutting the wall and shit. And he was really like nice and jovial all weekend to Carrot. So, like, I was talking to him after one of the matches, and I was just telling him how awesome I thought it was, and how, like, I just thought he did really well, and he was just kept saying thank you over and over, and was like bowing to me and all this, and like was asking me what I thought about this thing or that thing, and I was like trying to like hold the conversation, but all I saw was this crazy contact lens eye staring me in the face. I was like, oh, this is freaky.
I find that's really difficult to respond to, is when you've just seen a match and the wrestler comes over and says, oh, what did you think of it?
Yeah, well, I went...
It's so hard to... Because you don't want to critique it, because if they're asking you what you thought of it, then they thought it was good.
Yeah, I...
Even if it was good, it's putting it into words is very difficult.
There's a few guys that I've kind of established a bit of a relationship with that will ask me kind of what I thought of this or that. Like Marty would be someone that whenever he saw me over the weekend, he kind of asked me what I thought about this or that. With like Ilya or a lot of other people, like I generally am the one, like whenever, because I'd be doing constant trips backstage during the show to fill up water bottles to keep the old voice lubricated, and like I just see different guys after matches, and like I'm such a mark, I'm not able to help myself just like going up and being like, oh my god, that was the best, and I get so excited at wrestling shows, I'm like just ridiculously over the top, and yeah, I tell everyone they've had the match of the year like five times a weekend. It's a bit ridiculous. I remember one year at Carrot, just like saying to, I don't know if I was saying it to Ricochet or I was saying it to someone else beside Ricochet, I was like, oh my god, that was the match of the year. Ricochet was like, dude, it's March. I was like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I know no wrestlers. Dahlia Black wished me happy birthday though, so that's the closest I am to any wrestler.
I saw Dahlia Black for the first time the other day. She was awesome, and I'm hoping she is going to be on the next OTT show, because Ginny has a tag team partner for the next OTT, so I'm hoping it's Dahlia Black. You should. That's another reason you should come to 16 Carat, Ali. It's very, very interactive between all the fans and all the wrestlers.
Yeah, like, I guess you could talk about that, like the 16 Carat experience, because I know there's like a whole weekend surrounding it. It's almost like their WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You got the Ambition show as well, and just all sorts of stuff. So why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Well, yeah, that's definitely one of the big things about it, and what kind of got me going every year as a fan. One of the big draws for me was all the different things they did, like from Q&As to after parties, even the soccer match, which was actually gone this year. Fans versus wrestlers soccer match, which was gone this year. It may come back, I don't know, but it's featured such things like Ricky Marvin giving a fan a hurricanrana, super crazy dropkick, super crazy dropkicking a fan, Big Daddy Walter powerbombing fans. Tends to always be this guy Marcus that I know. He seems to always be the one on the bad end of it. But a lot of different things they do. There was like a little, almost like a WWE fan access style thing this year, where they set up the Q&As and all the stuff that was going on the Sunday. They set it up in the arena with the ring, so they hosted a bunch of things in the ring and stuff like this. Fans got to come into the ring for different things. They did a quiz. I even got to go into the ring at one point, my first time ever in a wrestling ring. I was shitting myself over like crotching myself on the ropes trying to get in. I was like, Jeremy, just like, again, Jeremy is 7 foot, I was like, Jeremy, just like lift me up, like who was it? There was some like valet that used to just kind of get lifted up into the ring. I just wanted him to just lift me like that and just place me delicately into the ring. But they do all kinds of cool stuff, and it's a really awesome experience for the fans all weekend long. It's one of those things that if you have other things you want to do over the course of the weekend that aren't to do with WXW, you'll find very little windows to slot them in because there's like so much stuff officially organized, and pretty much everything comes under the umbrella of what you pay for your tickets, so there's really no extra charges or anything like that.
Is that the building only holds like, what, 750, 800, about that?
Oh, well, there's all these different areas and rooms in the complex, the Turbine and Halle complex, where the shows are located, so there's a bunch of different places. There's one where they'll run a lot of shows, like if you watched the Tag League from last year, that area holds I think 600 max. They'll do a lot of shows there. And then different depending on what setups and stuff they do, ramps and entrances and all this, yeah, they can the setup they had for Carrot this year, they were able to get in like 750, I think was probably the max. And that's what you there was 750 in there on the Saturday, and there was really not that much room to like walk to the bar or move around or go to the bathroom or anything. So yeah, I was very thankful for the bathroom in the balcony that only like people up in the balcony were able to use. So because anytime, like as I said, that I had to walk downstairs to go get water from backstage, like just trying to get through was just taking forever, just trying to get through people. At one point, Sami Callihan was walking back from his merch, and I was just walking behind him, and he was just like a bulldozer, and he was just plowing a hole through all these fans. And I was just like, I'm just gonna go behind you here and just like let you carve a path. And he's like, I don't give a fuck, I'll just walk over them all. And I was like, well, that'll do nicely.
That's how he wrestles as well.
So, pretty much, Sammy is all go. He's like Energizer Bunny as a wrestler.
Before we move on to night two, there's one thing we got to address in night one, and that was a rather infamous move. But I'm not going to call a headbutt because it wasn't on the head. Well, I guess it was a headbutt, but it wasn't to another man's head. But Timmy Thatcher's shoulder butt on Sasa Keel.
He's going to find you, Ollie. You know this.
What's the controversy around this? Oh, I tweeted. Was it you guys discussing it? I tweeted that something a couple of days ago about how I wouldn't like to take a Timothy Thatcher headbutt to the chest. I haven't watched the VOD of
Oh,
that
yeah.
match yet. Does he hit the shoulder? From my vantage point up in the balcony, it looked like he just kind of clobbered him in the chest. I know that a lot of his head, because he does that move a lot now, and he usually hits people around the chest collarbone area, right?
Yeah. On my Twitter, I posted like a screen grab. I know wrestling screen grabs can often look a bit ridiculous, but it's like Thatcher just kind of like looks like he's drunkenly leaning on Keel, and then Keel falls over. I don't know. I will say that I did enjoy the Thatcher Callahan match because there was some actual like emotion going on in it, and like they actually felt like a struggle.
I
But.
thought that match was incredible. That was one of my matches of the weekend. I honestly, I aside from the Chris Hero match at Mania Weekend last year, it was my favorite Timothy Thatcher match, and
It's definitely my.
probably my favorite Sammy match ever.
Callahan was so stiff in that match, like ridiculous. I actually found it a little bit uncomfortable, and then I'm like really into like that style, like Ishii and all that business. But the amount of times that he kicked Thatcher in the head, with him
It was
not seeing it
ridiculous.
coming, it was just like, ooh, I was starting to feel the pain of the situation.
Sammy was like that all weekend. Poor Kim Ray. Oh my God. I
Oh.
saw Kim Ray the next day and I was just like, are you okay? He was just kind of all glassy eyed and he was like, yes, I'm fine. It was a tough match and he had this big black eye and I was like, oh.
I'll give a shout out to Kim Ray as well. He was fantastic in match, I thought. Like, he got busted open almost immediately, and then like his crazy hair and just like the intensity with which he wrestled, like he really showed up in that match.
Yeah,
That was a really good job from him.
he was really hoping that like taking that beating would kind of get him a bit more respect from the fans and stuff. And I know, and credit to Sammy during the Q&A, he was on the same panel as Kim Ray, and like it was with like loads of the international guys. So they were all getting all the questions, and Kim was just kind of sitting there. And then Sammy stopped in the middle of the Q&A and just said, "Hey, someone's got to ask Kim Ray a question." Starts putting him over and calling him like toughest guy, and he just went to war with him last night. And people gave Kim a big round of applause after that, so that was kind of cool of Sammy. On the Thatcher match, one little since I am good for the I guess on this show I can provide a few extra little scoops. Backstage in the afternoon, like you see, because they had a ring set up backstage as well, so there'd be a lot of the wrestlers kind of going through their matches and stuff like that. And I saw,
That's clever.
I kept seeing Sammy with different people, and because I didn't really know who the quarterfinals were, I tried to kind of avoid knowing how the tournament was going to progress, which I actually did a really good job of. But I saw different people kind of working out. I kept seeing Sammy with all different people. I was like, How is Sammy, like, he's in the quarterfinals, so he should just be in one singles match tonight. So I was a bit confused. And then I just realized he was kind of helping out all the other matches. And I was like, what about Sammy's own match? And then I saw Tim Thatcher just sitting on a couch, eyes closed, kind of just chilling, feet up. And I sat down beside him and I was like, so, who have you got tonight, buddy? And he was like, Mr. Callahan. And I was like, oh. And it was like, oh, everyone else seems to be, I was like joking about it, like everyone's like going through their matches. It was like, you're taking it easy. And he was like, ah, I like to just figure it out when we're there. He was just so nonplussed about it. Just the idea of Timothy Thatcher, just no planning of matches. Let's just figure it out there. And you kind of, you get that vibe with his matches that they are kind of just make it up as you go kind of thing.
He has a hell of a scary face, so I will say that I did enjoy his Sammy Callahan match so that he doesn't come and kill me one day.
I think he probably will anyway, because you've been bad-mouthing him for like 4 or 5 shows.
It's never intentional, it just kind of happens.
Don't worry, Ali. He is the type that he would thank you for investing your time in watching his stuff, and he would apologize for his stuff not being up to your liking.
Oh, if he apologizes, I'll just feel bad.
Oh, you would.
I'd rather he beat me up.
I'll be honest. If you even talk to this guy for 5 seconds, you'd feel bad for ever criticizing him because he's the nicest man. Every time he's ever seen me, he's bowed to me as he shook my hand.
Wow.
And every time he's ever seen me when I've been with my girlfriend, he's taken his hat off to greet her. He does that to any woman he sees. He is the biggest gentleman you'll ever meet in your life. He's so nice. I can't put the guy over enough.
Timmy the Gent.
I was like, when I first saw him when I arrived on Friday, I was just like, oh my God, you're doing this, and Gabe has you booked against this guy. Just go. And he was like, he was kind of no sales. Like, tell me though, how have you been? And I was like, I've been grand. I don't do anything. Fuck me. I don't do anything exciting. But he's just genuine like that.
So, night two question. What was your favourite match from night two?
You want to go first, Ali?
I'll let you go first this time, Alan.
I'm gonna say Osprey and Zach, I think. I just thought that was... If you want to take a match and say, this is 2016 pro wrestling state of the art, and show it to someone in a capsule 100 years from now, or show it to someone 20 years ago just to blow their minds... this would probably be the match I'd show them, because it was state-of-the-art perfection from start to finish, but perfection without ever feeling like super over-choreographed. Like, there was a sense of struggle and a sense of a game of one-upsmanship, and like it was just amazing from start to finish. It was only about 11 minutes or so, I'd say. And
I got it down as 12, maybe. 12, but,
yeah. That's, and they just killed it.
12 quality minutes.
12 quality minutes. There was not a second of this which was filler. It was just perfect. I adored it. And the finish, oh, so good. Liger Bomb just executed to precision, turned straight into what I call the young boy killer. What he does to, what he did to like the likes of Genba and Kumano and Noah to beat them whenever he'd have a chance to kind of get a squash match win, busting that
every move beat Kumano.
Yeah, but busting that out on Will Ospreay and just like really wrenching it in, that was a cool ending for me.
Yeah, I might actually genuinely say my match of the night was Callahan Thatcher. Like, I thought it was stiff as hell and just like very emotional towards the end. Like, they really ramped up the intensity. Sabre Jr. Ospreay, like you say, such like a time capsule match. Like, you could show that in any context and it would be really good. And like that submission, just like ridiculous. I feel like they've had better matches in the past though, so I'll go with someone else this time.
So with that, because a few people mentioned comparing it to the Progress Strong Style 16 final, I wasn't wild on that match, so I prefer it to that one. But like for me, that Progress final felt like both guys were kind of tired and they had a long weekend and then they had to wrestle this long match. And the crowd, the same. I thought the crowd for that final were a little burnt out compared to what they had been earlier that weekend. Is there any other matches? I'm trying to think, was there any others they've had against each other?
I don't think so. I was referring to the Progress.
Okay. You're a big fan of that
Strong Style
match. Because I know a lot of people
are.
Definitely. I'm definitely on an island with not being wild on it, but I preferred this more sort of concise. I'm really interested to see what they do in Evolve next weekend. I think they could have a great one there.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I'd like to see them have like a match where they're both fresh and they get like 20 minutes. I'd be quite happy to see that, just to see what happens. Because that 12 minutes was absolutely perfect, but I don't think it's really a truly great match because it all felt like they were trying to rush to get all the stuff in. Even though everything that they executed was executed to perfection, it all felt a bit too rushed.
Yeah.
Do you guys, more sort of theoretical overarching question about Zack Sabre Jr., do you feel he's a Bryan Danielson 25-30 minute epic kind of wrestler yet, or do you think his sweet spot is in that 10-15-16 range? Part of me thinks the latter. I've yet to see him have a match that felt like one of those Bryan Danielson world title matches.
I did like the one with Skill from Bowler last year,
but
which was
that one,
like 25 minutes. It was very odd.
That
very
was
odd
really
match,
long.
But I really enjoyed it.
That one was really long, but that had like long segments of kind of doing the British comedy and stuff like that, and the stuff to pop the crowd kind of was a bit tongue-in-cheek at times. I don't know. I I'm the biggest Zach fan in the world. What he does, he's brilliant at. But I suppose the Roderick matches in Evolve and PWG are probably the closest example of having that long, epic, back and forth main event style match. Maybe the Ciampa match as well in Progress. But other than those, like I feel I like Zach best in a 10-15 minute range. Maybe the reason why I like that Ospreay match so much.
I haven't really seen him in any like epic main event length match apart from the Progress Super Strong Style match. Most of his matches are, you know, 10-15 minutes and they just go crazy. Like it would be interesting to see him in that role, but he's just never in the places he's been to, never really been in that role. I guess now PWG might put him in that role now. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops that over the course of the next couple of years. Definitely.
Rev Pro as well. I actually forgot. The AJ match. And the AJ match was interesting because I thought the first like three quarters of it were the first three quarters of a long epic. Like they really paced it like a Bryan Danielson kind of match. But then I thought the last sort of quarter, the last third of it was it sort of came together a lot quicker than I was expecting it to. It finished kind of came a bit out of nowhere. Still an amazing match. I loved it. But I was thinking they were going another 10 minutes when the finish happened.
The thing with Sabre Jr. is I think he's a guy that's good enough that you can build around him. When we're looking at the matches that you have this weekend, for example, he wrestled against an awful lot of different guys, but the standard was always very high. And that's when you're aiming to build a company around someone, you want someone who can have good matches against a variety of opponents, and that's what he is. And there aren't many who can do that.
Yeah, he had four really good, really different matches throughout the course of the weekend with, as you said, very different guys. So, yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, Zach did, in fact, get to the final and win 16 card.
we'll get to that soon, don't worry.
While we're still on night two, I'd like to talk about the title match, the four-way with Carsten Beck defending against Absolute Andy, Bad Bones, and Jørn Simmons.
Yes.
It had a really good storyline, but I really wasn't into the work.
Yeah, I am curious to see what it's like on VOD because it was definitely very much a playing to the storylines, playing to the fans that are invested in the product type match. I wouldn't pick this as a match to show a new fan to sell them on WXW. I would if the entrances were shown in full because these were. I don't know how much you got to see on the clip.
We got, did get to see Jørn with the dancing.
oh my god!
Doing the Usain
Bolt. Entrance was incredible. All of them were incredible. Like these are WrestleMania level entrances for these guys, and the top people in WXW were just almost in tears watching this. It was like this, oh my god, I can't believe we've managed to put this all together, and this is what our product is now. Like, they were really proud of it. The match, if you aren't invested in the storylines and the characters, it wouldn't really be for you to jump in on, and just because compared to some of the other things on the show, the match isn't as spectacular. It isn't as crisp. The guys in the match, like, I think Bones is a hell of a wrestler. I think Bones is really, really good. The other three guys, they aren't at the level in terms of the mechanics and technical ability as like your Zacks and your Ospreys and your Skrulls and all these other guys you saw over the course of the weekend, but they do have well-rounded, established over characters within the company. And Simmons is actually amazingly only like 2 years in. He's a great prospect, but I don't know if he'll ever become like one of those Ospreay Zack type guys, just because of, and he would be the first to admit this, that is not what he sees as pro wrestling at all, and he doesn't care for that style. He doesn't think he is that style. He is a character-based wrestler. He is a look-based wrestler. He is a sports entertainment guy, not a wrestling guy. I don't think Jurrin Simmons has watched too many Japan tapes in his lifetime. I don't think he watches PWG. I think if he did, he'd bury it. and he, yeah, he is what he is, and what he is right now what they're pushing as their champion. Because another thing with WXW is they tour and do shows every week around Germany, and they need their champion to be someone who they can put on all these shows in these small towns going around Germany, can work all the shows, you can put them on a poster, they look impressive, etc., etc. You can't put the belt right now on a Tommy End or a Zack Sabre Jr., who would be a part-time guy. Watch me eat my words now if Zach goes and wins the title when Jurrin defends against him. But my understanding, and this isn't from talking to them, it's just from me applying what I think is logic, is that they feel the need to have their titles almost like a separate thing from like the guys.
That is how it came across.
Yeah, it definitely felt like it was kind of kept separate. And now that they're touring so much, they need their champion to be someone that's going to be around all the time, and they can build storylines around on Shotgun and stuff like that. And I actually think the storylines have been great, and the Jurrin turning on Karsten story has been built over a year, and it's really, really flowed well, and a lot of subtle hints thrown in throughout Shotgun over the course of that year. And I think it was a really well-written, well-done storyline, and executed very well in the end. And it was a shame. The one downer of that match was that Andy and Bones both got really badly injured, both taken to hospital at the end of the match. The match had crazy heat. Maybe not like Axel and Ilya, but it had a lot of heat, and people were very much behind Karsten at the end. And he pretty much turned fully babyface, but at the same time retired at the end as he turned babyface. I thought it definitely worked for what they were trying to achieve, but it wouldn't be a match I'd recommend to someone who's never seen the company before.
Yeah, I love the way the title change came off, and just how Jurrin Simmons usurped Karsten Beck, essentially, with Beck apparently retiring. Obviously they need like a new top heel, and Simmons fits that bill perfectly. Like you said, he has that great look.
And I think of a singer.
He is indeed. And I just like the way he took everything from Karsten Beck in that moment. Like, he took Melanie Gray, he took the title, he took the cape, he took the gimmick, essentially. And he definitely looks ready. He looks fantastic. Like, massive is certainly a term that you can apply to him. I'm looking forward to that match with Sabre Jr.
It's going to be really interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall of everything that goes into planning that match, because you want to talk about two different philosophies of pro wrestling. Zach usually gets to just do his own thing. With like WXW, they have agents that will help a lot with the matches and kind of be quite hands-on with different things about the matches and stuff like that, especially with the more storyline-heavy stuff. But Zach, generally, I think they just have enough respect and confidence in him that they just let him do his thing. And I would be very curious to see how that all kind of comes out. I'm sure it would be perfect because you're dealing with professionals who are at the end of the day going to do what the company asks of them, and it's gonna go fine. But it's a curious dynamic. It's, as I said, two different philosophies of what pro wrestling is, and I think they should work it into the match in different ways, and I think it could make for a very interesting match.
So something about Zach, he is capable of having that same level of match with just about anyone. He can tie anyone up in those grounded holds, and it just depends on how that person reacts to them as to.
And Jern may well react, being like, "Fuck off with that stupid shit! I'm gonna stall at ringside for 10 minutes."
He is a Chinlock City.
The Chinlock City. He was not happy when that got put in as his on his Titantron. He got really mad at the production guy because he was like, "Fuck that! It's like that's the crowd are all chanting it, and it's getting me over as a babyface. Fuck that!"
Yeah,
he doesn't like having anything redeeming about himself that the crowd will get behind.
I did enjoy that everyone in this match looked or acted a bit like Triple H. In various incarnations.
You know, then you say that, I could definitely see that.
You got 2000s Triple H in Ian Simmons, current Triple H in Absolute Andy, Carson Beck has sort of been like Reign of Terror Triple H in this title reign, and you can see a little bit of it in Bad Bones.
Bones is like no-nonsense ass-kicker leather jacket and jean vest Triple H.
Storming into Raglan's home.
Yeah, he'd need the wig. Yeah, that's true.
And with that, should we move on to the third?
Night two, I want to say. Okay. Alan's cool that Melanie Gray looked like Ashley Simpson. Top 10 cool all time.
Tony Storm looked like Jessica Simpson.
Oh, I got it completely wrong. Well, she looks like Ashley Simpson, so...
Is Ashley Simpson Jessica Simpson's sister?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I've totally forgotten about her, actually, now that you say it. but Jessica Simpson and Toni Storm are, like, identical twins. I said it to a few people, and people were like, yeah, I guess, kinda. But, like, I'm like, no, not I guess, kind of. They are actually identical twins. Like, it's uncanny. And I don't know how other people aren't as amazed as this is me.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
2004 pop.
Yeah, that'd explain that then.
Yeah, see, that's where my knowledge of mainstream like music and stuff ends. Like Jessica Simpson is like that's my wheelhouse, and anything after that, like whatever they're doing now, I have no idea. Wrestling consumed my life around 2005, and I stopped learning anything else.
So now that we're done with. Pop stars from 10 years ago who I don't know.
I tried to work it into a world-class reference. I said she may look like Jessica Simpson, but she hits like... And then I was like, I'm struggling to think of a Simpson who might hit hard. I think there was a guy in world-class back in the day. It was the worst line on commentary ever, but I just... I was having fun with Rico when he was doing the commentary with me in that match, so yeah.
I'm actually wearing a world-class shirt right now.
That's why you're the man.
So that's interesting. So, final night of the tournament. Drew Galloway, he had to go back to Scotland because he had a match on night two. So his quarterfinal actually fell into night three right at the start, and he just hadn't slept. At all, he just kind of gone and flown to Scotland and come back to Germany and hadn't slept, and he still looks in pretty good nick.
He's crazy, like he's batshit insane. I don't know how he's as fired up as he is all the time. Like that promo he cut on night two, I just love how positive he is about pro wrestling and how much he clearly loves pro wrestling and just how the length he's willing to go to do this. I have so much respect for that guy, and he had the effort he put in wrestling these two matches back to back after having all that travel and not sleeping and then still being buzzing after the show or all through the show and watching other matches and just being excited for things. Like, if that was me, like, if I somehow managed to get myself to have those two matches, like, the first thing I'd do is just fall back and just curl up in a ball and get someone to put a blanket over me or something. But he was just going around watching matches and being psyched up for things and being psyched up for the other wrestlers. And yeah, what a guy. But,
What a man. I definitely loved the opening of Night 3 with Galloway going Iron Man. If he'd won that semi-final, I would have thought he would have like stayed around to try and wrestle the final straight away. Like,
he did just wrestle in every match. He'd have been in the six man and the mixed tag.
Like right at the beginning with Van Helico, like they try and pin each other straight away, obviously, because they have two more matches to face. I really liked that, and just like how sprinty that match was and how like Galloway was looking for the Future Shock every opportunity and hit it and still couldn't win, and he was just like aghast.
Yeah, he busted out that spinning Future Shock, first time I've seen him.
Oh, God, that was crazy. Yeah. And then he gets on the mic, as post-match Drew Galloway tends to do, and, like, again, just goes crazy and is like, let me face Dita Jr. straight away. And they have a crazy match, too, and I feel like that was another match that Dita Jr. needed to win on his road to the final. Like, being able to beat Galloway, like, fired up Galloway, was like definitely a roadblock for him. I like the call that Galloway didn't want to lose any momentum, like, because he's like an emotional wrestler and like runs on momentum essentially. He didn't want to lose any by going to the back for a match. Like, he was just going straight out again. So that, yeah, like the first half an hour of the show was like definitely very exciting, because like you have this crazy Galloway and you don't know what he's gonna do, and he's just trying to hang in there and work around his circumstances.
Straight into Sabre Jr. and Callahan right after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a hell of a way to start the third night.
Yeah, they had a hell of a match too. That was a match that was really good, reminiscent of some of the other matches. It was like kind of the stuff you'd seen Zach do in his matches, the stuff you'd seen Sammy do in his matches merged together. And it was like, yeah, that worked really well. What I kind of wanted to bring up from night three was, and this is merging it into something from night two as well, there was a four-way on night two and a tag match on night three, which to me were one of the things 16 Karat can offer, is when it brings over all these top talents from around the world, is just put together some crazy multi-man matches that you wouldn't see anywhere else or that you haven't seen anywhere else, and just let guys go wild. Particularly, it's now tradition that the semi-main event of night three is they call it the Spotfest tag match, and they aren't, like, I think it's even written up on the board as like the Spotfest tag match, and they aren't shy about just letting the guys and encouraging them to go wild, and it delivered in a huge way this year with Marty. And
I thought the four-way match on night two was going to be like the craziest, spottiest match on the weekend, and then this came along.
There were similarities.
And so Bailey and Ospreay. Arnold, I mean, this was twice as long.
What was the two lineups for the two matches?
The tag team match was Skrull and Trevor Lee against Mike Bailey and Will Ospreay, and the four-way was Skrull, Lee, Bailey and Angelico?
Yeah, so it was just Angelico subbing in for Ospreay, right? And it was otherwise the same three guys. So they played off a few of the different things. In the tag, Marty and Trevor kind of developed this alliance as the villains.
Yeah.
Trevor was trying to mimic Marty's gimmick, and Marty wasn't down with it.
He looked nuts.
Then he embraced it, and they kind of did the combination villain shake it off kind of a thing, because Trevor Lee's music is Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. The best thing ever was during Trevor Lee's entrance, when he'd be doing the Shake It Off and he'd just be going wild, and then he'd start going around the edges of the ring stomping all the fingers of the fans who were slapping him. Just a great heel move. But the way these guys clicked, with the central part of the tag being the continuation of the rivalry of the year of Will Ospreay and Marty Skrull, still finding new ways to just blow your mind. I've seen all three of their matches now, and each one they've done new things that have just made me lose my shit. these two guys, what they're doing right now is special beyond belief. And yeah, I think we're all very fortunate to be able to see it live as it happens. And if you liked their match in Rev Pro, you will love what they did here against each other, with the added dynamic of Trevor Lee and Speedball being great too. And the four-way, having Angelico and getting him to do the crazy dive as if he was in the temple. But that was even topped by, I thought, the Trevor Lee running down the ramp.
Yeah, Trevor Lee out of nowhere. Yeah. Breaking up a pinfall, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was...
A pinfall or a submission?
I wasn't even noticing him. I had my eye on the pin, and then I just saw him barreling down the entrance ramp and clearing the top rope into a double stomp to break up the pin. And he did the same spot again on night two. And it was like, even though people had, or on night three in the tag, even though people had seen it the night before, there was the moment he did it and the tag was so perfect that you again didn't see it coming. And it was after all this other crazy shit. It was just amazing. That tag was just mind-blowing. And yeah, you definitely, for anyone who's a fan of just crazy athletic matches between the four-way and the tag, you definitely got a great fill of it here with 16 card this year.
Would you say that was match of the weekend, the tag?
You know, I couldn't say for sure until I watch everything back, but live, I'd probably say yeah. By the end, it probably was.
I think I had that over the Ospreay Strickland match by a hair. And those two were very close.
I'd go Strickland Ospreay over that, but yeah, very strong match, crazy match.
I really liked the final as well, which I can't remember who it was. I read somebody else's review just before I watched it, and they had it like 2.5 stars or something, and I was like, "What the hell?
What are you watching me?"
Wait,
is that Ross?
Rob is actually reviewing night three, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's not up yet, but it'll be interesting to see what he thinks of it as well. Probably not 2.5 stars.
I thought the final was really good. It was what you often see with finals of tournaments, of where they sell that they've just had this wear out of a weekend, and then they're just trying to get the job done as quickly as possible. It's like there's no messing about, it's just right into it in the final. And that may be one of the reasons, because I like that so much, that dynamic, that might be one of the reasons I wasn't as wild on that Progress final from last year, because it was kind of a longer match. It didn't have that sense of urgency, and it just felt like two guys who were tired, and they were like, I'm not saying they were actually tired, but in story they were kind of tired, and they weren't, the match was just kind of dragging a little bit, whereas this one, it was just like Zach was looking to finish as early as he could, get this guy beat and win 16 carat. Like, Zach very much had, his story was that he has got so close so many times, and this year he wasn't messing about, and when he got Axel in the final, he owed him one from the semi-final last year, and he was just not messing about. He wanted to finish this quickly and get that trophy. And Axel, on the other hand, was just riding this wave of emotion and momentum throughout the whole weekend, and he had been battered and bruised. He also had to wrestle two matches at Ambition on the Saturday morning. He had fucking Mike Bailey going on Taekwondo in a worked shoot, just kicking the shit out of him, like literally.
It worked into a shoot.
I would say, so if the Marty match, the I Quit match, would have been at about 10 p.m. the night before, and this was midday the next day, you're talking about like a little over 12 hours later, he's, all those umbrella shots are getting followed up with just the stiffest kicks from a national competition level Taekwondo martial artist. It was just just brutal stuff. But he's a young, supple individual. He can fire through these weekends.
Yeah, I thought like the emotion in this match again really strong. The way both guys almost were like trying to like look at each other the entire time throughout the match. Like Saber kept wanting to like stare down Dieter Jr. even when he was like in a hold of Dieter Jr.'s. I thought that was really intriguing because like they're working off of last year as well. Just like the Skull match, Saber Jr. lost to Dieter Jr. in the semi-final last year. So like, yeah, they brought it up on commentary again. that Zach was trying to get revenge for last year because he doesn't like being beaten or having that to deal with, like, as he goes through his career, having guys with wins over them, him. So I really liked that dynamic, and also just, like, just Zach trying to test Axel as well with, like, the trading slaps and stuff. Really exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a good end to a good weekend. It's the, this is the most WXW I've seen in one chunk, and it's a very enjoyable experience.
I just want to make mention of a couple of people who I thought were kind of under the radar, kind of breakout performers of the weekend that did a really, really good job. Coincidentally, three people who have been sharing digs together in the WXW dojo for the better part of the last couple of months. David Starr, Tony Storm, and Tyler Bate.
All three.
Their last weekend in Germany was Carrot Weekend. David Starr's parents were actually over from the US for night three, seeing him perform. I think that was pretty cool for him.
This is the first time I'd seen David Starr, and damn.
Yeah, I thought David Starr was terrific. I saw him a couple of years ago, and he was nowhere near this good. It's like he's had a switch flicked.
He's only been around, I think, 2.5-3 years, so you probably saw him like right at the start. And he is, someone said it to me over the weekend, and I was like, yes, that is bang on who he is. He's Adam Cole, essentially. Kind of comes out of the same area, CZW trainee, and he's just kind of got that total package kind of feel about him. Not like Sugar, but just he's a really confident, charismatic, can wrestle his ass off, can be a babyface or a heel, just has poise and aura about him. And he did a really good job. The tag title match with him, and because he would have been a heel on like all the WXW shows leading up to this over the course of the tour, but I think he just won the respect of the fans, and he just has so much live charisma that the crowd really took to him over Carrot Weekend. And by the end of the weekend, him and Shane Strickland were a big-time babyface team, and they got to go for the tag titles against Cerberus in a really good match, which you can actually see for free on Shotgun last week. So, I'd encourage people to check that out if they haven't bought Carrot. And Tony Storm, I thought, incredibly impressive. If she's not in WWE at some point, I will be shocked, because she's super talented and she would fit like a glove in their women's division right now with Sasha and Bayley and all the likes of them, because she's tons of fire and she's a hell of a wrestler to boot. And Tyler Bate, I'm sure you guys have talked enough great things about Tyler Bate over the last few months. Everyone knows how good this guy is. But I thought he just looked fantastic over the course of the weekend. His singles win over Silas Young.
We're not used to seeing him win.
Yeah, I know. But getting a win over Silas Young was a big scalp for him. Yeah. Using a pretty sweet brainbuster to do it. That was one heck of an opener on night two.
Yeah, definitely.
I've got to agree on all three of those. They all had a really great weekend.
I think Star wins the undercard King of Carrot award for me. He is the milk. He is the milk in my coffee.
He's the milk in your coffee. He's the what's all his? He's got all these nicknames. The Jewish
Cannon. My wrestler. My favorite wrestler's favorite wrestler.
Favorite wrestler. The man of the 104-minute man or something like that, because he like wrestled a match that was like a minute less than the Trevor Lee match. he's pretty cool dude. And question for you guys. Since you've seen the full VOD, what did you feel about the production compared to other indies and stuff? How did it come across to you watching it?
Obviously, it's disappointing that they can't show the entrances in full for whatever reason.
Same as PWG, really, just not wanting to mess around with the copyrights. Now, would you prefer if they just did like PWG and just go straight? Well, I suppose PWG just do show the guys.
Yeah, it's basically the guy walking out, isn't it? That's
about it. WXW just do it a little more extended. You'll see a bit more of the walkout with that background music playing, and then they go straight into the match. I suppose it It might sting a little less if you just cut the entrance out entirely, and then you wouldn't be thinking about it as much. But then when they show the little bit of the entrance every time, you're kind of reminded that you're not seeing it. And it doesn't help as well that, like, you see all the crowd singing and dancing and being so happy. And it's like, you can see that it's a crazy cool atmosphere. And trust me, it is. But
it's not when they used to dub the ECW DVDs and when Enter Sandman was on, or New Jack's music was on, and like it's on for like the whole match, and you've just got this boring, repetitive thing dubbed on top of it. It's not got to that point, but it was kind of a detriment to the dance off, because when the dance off was going down, there was kind of dubbed music over the top, to the point where Ollie didn't actually know what they were dancing to.
Because the crowd was singing All Night Long afterwards. Yeah. I assumed it was Rich Swann's theme. Yeah. It's like an ode to him, apparently not.
There was a clip on, someone put a clip on YouTube from Twitter, from the crowd from that night. So I'd seen it at the time, so I knew what it was. But that's the only way I'd know.
Well, All Night Long is very over with the crowd from when Swan and Ricochet were over there, and they just kind of wanted to see the dancing go on all night long, essentially. But I will direct people to, I won't direct people to the illegal match between Ospreay and Strickland that's on YouTube, but I will direct people to the illegal fan cam of the dance-off in full with Ospreay and Strickland with the real music in, because I doubt WXW care about that being there, because they didn't put it up there themselves, and it's just literally a fan recording a thing, so they can't get in trouble for it, I would assume. I don't know the legalities, but yeah, the dance off is there, and you can watch it in full on YouTube.
And it was good.
It was very good. But aside from the music, like the way it's shot, video quality, all that kind of stuff,
I noticed I only noticed this sort of late on in the weekend, but like, because of the fact that all the people are standing like right next to the ring, which is really cool, by the way. but like, the camera angles weren't very dynamic, or like they were only from like one place on the ring, and it didn't really matter.
I actually
kind of
enjoyed that. It kind of felt like that was our spot. You know, we were ringside. That was our spot. With us.
I mean, it's not like Rev Pro who go like in a John Woo film.
I know what you mean. So like the floor cam, the guy on the floor was only
shooting. Yeah, not the hard cam, but okay.
So I'm not an expert in these things, but from what I saw, they had a hard cam that was like at ring level, and then they had a hard cam that was in the balcony pointed down. So they had the two kind of different, and from the few matches I have watched back, I noticed they do kind of flick between the two hard cams. And then they have the one floor cam as well, which I actually had never noticed that before, but that's a good point that Short is his name. I'll give him a shout out because he's just the best man in the world. he's such a cool guy who helps us so much. But it would be tough for him to maneuver around all those fans with that heavy camera. And I definitely understand that would be a thing, but I had never thought about that before.
It didn't affect anything. It was just something I noticed.
I'm not really a big production guy in terms of, which is weird because I have a degree in it. But like when I'm watching a wrestling show, as long as the wrestling is good, the rest of it I'm not too bothered about. But I know there are people who take issue with anything that doesn't reach that sort of HD level. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty solid production value.
The stage looked really good as well, especially compared to last year. Like the production quality had obviously gone up.
I was like such a little kid wanting to press the buttons up in the control area, which would like change which wrestlers would show up on. They had the two like banners, and they had like this screen up on the control area with all the different wrestlers' faces, and you could push the face, and then he'd appear down on the entrance way. I want to push all the buttons and have different wrestlers come up. But it was shooed away quickly. Get him away before he breaks something.
So you're not allowed in the gorilla position?
No.
Okay.
I think I'll ask. I have one more question to ask.
Sure.
Another, like, a scoop thing. But just the way the tournament is booked, I guess. Is it do they know what matches outside of the tournament are going to happen on days 2 and 3 beforehand, or is that just made up on the day or the day before?
They, as in the wrestlers or the guys making the matches?
The matchmakers.
Okay, so they would typically have like a skeleton kind of rough idea, but yeah. I know from history they will like kind of tweak things based on maybe different reactions things get, or like an example would be, and I don't know if this was the case, but I could totally see that, say, maybe they weren't planning for David Starr to be using him as a babyface over the weekend, and maybe not having him getting a tag title match with Strickland, but seeing him get over as such a babyface in the Ultimate Four-Way on night one, then maybe they're like, let's shuffle things around and move him into this role. I could totally see that being the case with him there. I'm sure there was other things, even if it wasn't that, that did follow that. But as I said, I try to avoid spoilers over, like, I was like dodging out on production meetings when I should have been at them and stuff like this, just because I didn't want to hear things that I didn't want to hear. But I kind of told them that in advance. I was like, yeah, I might just go around with my fingers in my ears at times, just ignore me. So like, I didn't really know like what the plans were on Friday and if they got changed by Sunday, but I'm sure there was some stuff that was shuffled around, and you always have to kind of be flexible in case there's maybe a guy picks up a knock and he can't do the match that you wanted him to do, and you have to maybe put him into a six-man tag or something like that. So there's always stuff like that that would need to be kind of juggled.
Yeah, you'll have to forgive my inquisitiveness.
No, I'm just
being
saying.
Such a young boy, you know, young lion. I don't really know much about what like goes on backstage at wrestling shows, so you know, just taking the opportunity to find out a bit.
It's very professional with WXW, and they treat the wrestlers very well. I can tell you, here's a scoop. I was able to avail of a very, very nice chicken curry on the Friday afternoon backstage before the show, from catering, and bananas at the plentiful. I was able to help myself to fruit and little snacks over the course of the weekend. It was great. They've got a cool little setup, and I know all the wrestlers, like Silas Young, people like that, who've been around and been in a million different places. Like, they were specifically like saying, like, how come I don't always get treated like this? This is amazing, type thing. So yeah, it's a very well-run, efficient German operation.
Expect nothing else.
Yeah.
So, how did you come to work for WXW?
Originally, I did a match at 16 Carat 2011 when their commentary and really a lot of things were a bit more sort of, they were starting to get a bit more kind of organized and stuff at that point, but there was still that element from the early years where things were kind of by the seat of the pants and a bit more relaxed, and like they'd have different people rotating in and out on commentary, and it wasn't taken as seriously. And the guys knew me from, like, Felix used to post some, like, CZW fans and stuff, so he knew me from there, and just the different guys I had known, and just when I first went over as a fan, I was just talking to different people, and they kind of just got to know me. And then by 2011, I just remember it was after the Sekimoto Generico match, I was just freaking out like crazy, and it was intermission. I was talking to Jacoby, who was he's one of the owners, and he was doing some of the commentary that day. And I was like, he was like, do you want to come up and do commentary for, it was going to be Leaders against Future Shock? And I was like, no way. And then I sat down in my seat and I was like, when am I ever going to have the opportunity to do a commentary on a wrestling match again? I regret this so much. So I went back up, tail between my legs, and I was like, maybe, could I? And they're like, sure. And I took Thumbtack Jack's spot at the commentary booth. He came back to me when I was sitting there, and he wasn't at his seat when I took over. I didn't even know he had been there. And then we were just about to start the match, and I got a tap on my shoulder, and I saw Thumbtack Jack, and I was like, he was like, sorry, that's my seat. And I was like, I was going to be doing commentary on this match. And he was like, oh, cool, yeah, gives me a break. I was like, phew, he didn't hit me with a light shoe. That's good. And but so yeah, there was just that, and then like I didn't approach them about trying to do anything more after that or anything like that. It was just kind of a one-off thing. That's all I saw it as. And then last year, about a month before Carrot, I got a message from them asking them if I, or them asking me if I'd like to do commentary. They were wanting to do take their commentary more seriously and have an English version. Well, they had actually been taking their German more seriously. They had done auditions for German announcers maybe a year before that or so, and they have really good German announcers that they use for every show now. And they wanted to have an English option to expand into the English market a bit, because Vimeo were very happy with them and the numbers they were doing. So Vimeo were like, we want this to expand the reach a little bit. And they said to Vimeo, well, if we could put up a second version of every show with English language, and Vimeo were all for that. So they were able to fund just getting those over and stuff. And so they asked me if I'd do it. And originally they were having me do it with Chris Brooks, the English wrestler, who he was the first guy they were asked to do it. And they asked him who he'd like to do it. And he put my name forward, and they knew of me, obviously, from just going to the shows and having done that one match. So they were like, that sounds good. And it was going to be me and Chris. But then Chris got a booking that weekend of Carrot last year. So he pulled out, and they asked me who I wanted to do it with. And I thought of Jeremy. I sent him some stuff from the Jeremy's done. I sent him a YouTube video he did interviewing Chris Jericho on Chris Jericho's tour bus. And they were like, oh, we like him. He's professional. He has a lovely English voice, like you two gentlemen. And they decided to put us together. And yeah, it's been going well, I like to think, so far. So yeah, I guess I'll be back for Tag League later this year. And I may have a new partner for that one, and Jeremy's tied up with work stuff. But they have someone in mind. And I think maybe there's another one before that they'd like us to come over for. I don't think I'll be able, but Jeremy might. So.
Good information.
So that is how you get gigs in wrestling. You just become a marking out hardcore
get
fan.
Really excited about Daisuke Sekimoto.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Which is very, very easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Same way I got my Fighting Spirit gig. It was just like Brian, the editor, is just like, I know Alan, he's just excited and loves wrestling. Gonna have him write the odd thing here and there.
Yeah, see, if you're not a commentator, you just don't love wrestling as much as Alan.
No, not at all.
Right, on that note, I think we're going to call it a day. I realise we haven't exactly covered the 3 days as we normally would, kind of going from match to match and talking about everything, but instead we've had some delightful insider information. So yes, I think that's worked
about,
out to
about the
better.
menu at catering.
Oh, the curry was marvelous. I can't wait to try it myself.
Yeah, hopefully before I don't want to get morbid. I will go to 16 Carat at some point in my life. Hopefully, very, very soon. So yeah, hope to join you there, Alan.
Yes, I will show you around lovely Oberhausen, Ollie.
Lovely Oberhausen, can't wait.
We'll see if we can get Rob together and make it into a road trip. Well, we keep saying that for stuff, and it's basically just Rev Pro at the moment. That's the only thing that we can actually go turn up for at the same time. Right, and on that note, we're going to do some plugs, I guess, before we go. And Ollie, you got anything to sell?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at another Ollie. I reviewed night one of 16 Carat for Voices of Wrestling, and continue to write about it and all sorts of other Euro goodness for the F4W weekly newsletter.
Doing a bang up job of that as well, I might say.
Cheers. And that's all my plugs.
Oh, it was a really big echo there.
My plugs are, let me see, Fighting Spirit Magazine, which I just mentioned. Brian Elliott, the man in charge, the kingpin of FSM, has a lovely magazine which he publishes every month, which This is the BritRest Roundtable, so if you're listening to us in the UK, you can go to your local... What's the place you guys sell magazines in the UK? WH Smiths, is that
WH
it?
WH Smiths,
yeah, that's
yes.
The one. You can go there, you can pick up Fighting Spirit off the shelf. If you're in over here in Ireland, you can pick it up at Easons. If not, you can get a subscription on fightingspiritmagazine.co.uk, or is it .com? I should really know that. One or the other. FSM Editor on Twitter. All the info for that you'll find easily. And yeah, I've got an article which I'm super excited about people reading and really proud of, which is coming out next month, or this month, I guess. April. Well, no, we're not in April yet. So in a week or two, it will be out. And yeah, it's celebrating the 10-year anniversary of something, and I won't tell you what that is. but we've got that. We've got Figure 4, FOW Online, WrestlingObserver.com. I host the DKP radio show. I'm in the midst of doing a ridiculous amount of shows right now as I get ready to head away for Japan. Did two shows with Justin and Amo very recently, the second of which will probably be up before this show is up, I'm guessing, because from what you described to me of what Rob has to do to edit the show together, I think I'll have my upload done before he does. And then I have another show with Mike Falcone and Travis McNeil, which I put up a couple days ago, previewing all the non-WrestleMania stuff over Mania weekend in Dallas. And before I go to Japan, there will be a Japan trip preview with myself and Joey Bay, who's going as well. He's coming from St. Louis. I'm coming from Dublin. We'll convene in Tokyo, and we will see a smorgasbord of fantastic wrestling in the capital of Japan. It should be the best time of my life. I can't wait for it. And yeah, follow me on Twitter at Alan4L, and you will be just thinking I'm a dick for the amount I talk about that, as I probably am.
So jealous.
That was fantastic. Yeah, really jealous about the Japan trip. I went, I can't remember what year it was now, 2006, and I saw Noah.
2006 Noah is a good... hey, you could be...
Yeah, there was a very good card.
Was it Corgan or...?
No, it was the Budokan.
Oh, you prick. I'm actually staying... One of my hotels is near Budokan Hall, so I kind of just want to rock up to it and be like...
Just go and have a look at it.
Yeah, it'd be like when I was in New York for the Jersey Mania. There was... The only thing happening in the garden was the Hall of Fame. I never go to the Hall of Fame, but I just rocked up to Madison Square Garden. I was like, there it is. There she is, looking well at Madison Square Garden. But yeah, that'll be the same thing with Budokan, I guess.
It is a lovely building. From the outside, anyway. The inside, all buildings are the same inside, basically. Well, that's not true. That's a total lie.
All buildings are the same inside. Aren't furious.
Just edit that off, Rob.
the Rev Pro Your Call show and the Rev Pro Reading show, exactly the same inside.
We did a lengthy piece on how different they were. I have no idea where that came from. Plugs. I'm available on Twitter at Arnold Furious. I've written something for Voices of Wrestling, which is the Night 2 of 16 Carat. I've reviewed that. And I've written something that I'm not allowed to talk about yet. So... I'll have to mention that at some other point.
Mysterious.
In time. Mysterious plug.
Me and Arnold both blueballing the listeners. Ollie, what are you going to blueball them on? You can't stay the baby face here. We got to turn your heel with us.
What am I doing with my life?
You know what Joe Lanza's big secret scoop is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Me and Joe Lanza are constantly sending each other DMs about this super secret thing, and the answer will shock you. Click here.
I legitimately don't know what it is.
But Ollie already knows, and he won't tell you. Heel.
It's a beep.
That is it. That is it for the BritRest Roundtable number 14. Thank you, Ollie.
Cheers.
And thank you, Alan. You've been a very entertaining guest.
I'm sorry for hijacking the show and it's been fine. I had a blast. Thank you guys for having me.
That's quite all right. So until next time, good evening.